Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Path Community Blog Talk Radio. I am your co-host Kim Skaggs and I am calling in from cold and chilly southern Indiana, and I am afforded the opportunity to speak with my co-host Greg Reich, who's in the great Northwest. How are things out in Washington State, my friend?
Doing well. Actually, we're experiencing what they call sun breaks in this part of the country, meaning there's little openings in the clouds and the sun's trying to peek out. Most of the country doesn't understand what sun breaks are, but those of us who live in an overcast country, most of the winter sun breaks are a big deal.
Well, I know you guys have been getting a lot of rain of late, so I'm glad for, and I'm sure you're glad for, those little sun breaks, as you call them. Well, I'm looking forward to our topic tonight, Greg. You shared with me that you had some ideas about dialoguing tonight around the idea of us being watched and people paying attention to what we're doing even when we're not aware of it. So let's jump in. I'm eager to hear what your thoughts are on this and just do a little talking around this topic.
Okay, well, first thing I'm going to do is give a disclaimer. We're not going to talk about aliens. We're not going to talk about the government.
Big Brother.
Sneaking in and Big Brother looking at all of our stuff, you know. So we're not conspiracists here. We're going to talk about who's watching you and what do they see, with the whole concept of that, whether we realize it or not, there are people that watch us every day, how we react, how we respond. And this idea came to me through a couple of different ways. One, I am absolutely a sports nut, so I was reading a guy who was talking about how even personal Twitter accounts, our tweets and our Facebook and all of our social networking can affect how we proceed. And he gave the example of a couple of national high school basketball players who were recognized as some of the top 100 basketball players. And they could have gone to several different colleges, but a couple of the colleges that were talking to them chose to stop talking to them, for the reason was that they looked at their Twitter accounts and their Facebook accounts, and they felt that they were posting things that they did not feel represented the school in a positive light. And so two students lost out on very lucrative scholarships because the fact that somebody was watching them, that they didn't realize was watching them, and how they were personifying themselves was less than admirable, according to these colleges. But the other thing was, is I was reading an article on baseball. I'm not a big baseball fan, but I'm fascinated by statistics and things like that. And this guy was talking about Joe DiMaggio, who was a famous baseball player for the Yankees way back in the day. And there was a clip from an interview that he did when a news broadcaster asked him why he always played so intense, with the same amount of intensity, whether the Yankees were way ahead or whether there was no pennant game on the line, that he always played with the same level of intensity. And his response just intrigued me. He said, because there may be somebody in the crowd that's never seen me play. And I thought to myself, how interesting is that, that a guy would keep the level of intensity as high as he could just because some future fan had never watched him play and he wanted to personify himself as the best he could be. And so I began to start thinking about that and started wondering, wow, you know, who's watching me? Who sees me live out my mission and vision? Who sees me interacting with my family and with my clients, and just with people that I see on the street? And what do I personify? Do I personify a person that's living the mission and vision the way I want to be personified? So I thought it would be fun to kind of talk about that based off of just some stuff that I read, that I just thought, wow, that is so true. There are people watching us all day long. that we need to be careful how we personify ourselves, how we come across, because it could make or break the difference between a future client. It could make or break the difference between a business venture or even the next step mm-hmm. in our vision, because that very person may be the person that God is trying to line up to interact with our lives in a way that can propel us forward.
I love that, Greg. And even the fact that you kind of parked on, obviously, the story about DiMaggio, but then you parked on what it was you personified. I wonder how often, our listeners actually sit and consider what they are projecting to the people around them. And as you reflected on this, when you were thinking about what you personified, what showed up for you? And I mean, without, going into personal detail, what was the byproduct or the fallout of you doing this exercise?
Well, I think part of it was I realized that in the past, there are times when I have lost potentially valuable clients because of not being able to handle my myself well, meaning, I had a bad day or I was trying to prove a point. I wanted to get a point across and I labored too hard to really prove it, and I scared them away and that kind of thing. And I look back at some of that stuff and say, wow, how many people have I lost as a coach because mm-hmm. I came across too strong, or I held the standard too high, or I did something along those lines? And then we also know, those of us who use the Path Element Profile, we know that people are going to see us in our challenged side of our personalities anyway. And so I went through the exercise of thinking, wow, as a fire, and I see myself as confidence, how many people do see me as controlling? And I see myself as visionary, and how many people see myself as self-centered, that kind of thing. And it was just kind of a fun exercise to say, wow, I need to be very
aware,
careful, of how I'm personifying mm-hmm. myself. Number one, because I don't want to lose business over it. Number two, because I don't want people to think in my challenged area anyway. I don't want to come. I want to come across as confident, but I definitely don't want to come across or appear as being controlling. So it just became one of those exercises of the mind. And I'll give you a good example. A lot of listeners don't know I'm 6'7" tall, so I'm a tall guy. And oftentimes perspective means a lot. And so I got up to Canada. I teach up in Canada at a small Bible college every January, a life management course. And one of the students was a married student, so he invited me over to his house for dinner, and he had a little 2.5-year-old daughter. And when I met her, she said, "I don't like you. You're too big." And I thought, oh, my heavens, it just instantly broke my heart. But I thought, okay, this is perspective. So after dinner, I got down over in the living room, and I got down on the floor by the couch, and I began to converse with this little gal. And it wasn't 15 minutes. I became the jungle gym and became named mm-hmm. Papa Greg. And, all this warm affection, this girl just absolutely stole my heart. But it was because of the fact that I chose not to come across as Goliath, this big guy. Mm-hmm. I chose to get down on mm-hmm. her level and let her perceive me from the level of which she lives. And I thought, wow, how many times have I not done that with other people? Not just because I'm big, but because of whatever, because of one fact or aspect of my personality or another. So, it's just been one of those things that have just been going through my mind for a while, and I thought, wow, it would be fun to discuss it with you on the air to see what kind of aha moments we can come up with.
Yeah, and as you're talking, I'm thinking about you getting getting down on this little girl's level. Mm-hmm. And basically what you did was you recovered an opportunity to connect with her that may have otherwise been lost based on her perspective, right? So do you think as a rule we can recover lost opportunities if we lose them? If we are walking in this insight?
You know, I do. I think if we are sensitive enough to try to recover them right away. I think that when we lose a lost opportunity, for example, with a client, and 3 or 4 days later, you know, I think, oh, man, I bet you I came across as gangbusters. I don't know if I can recover after 3 or 4 days. I mean, it's worth a try to call the person back and say, well, I think I may have came across a little bit too harsh or came across a little bit too this or too that. Boy, I'd really like another chance to work with you. What can I do? I don't know how that would work, but I know that if you can recover, if you're sensitive to the process and you catch yourself in the process, then you can recover within the same conversation. And I've done that before. I've done that to where I realize I'm coming across as a certain way and I'm intimidating this person, or I'm not answering this person's questions the way they would expect me to answer that. And then I shift back into a different mode and try to figure out a way to connect with them in a way that isn't just, you know, giving information, but connecting with them in a way that's going to bring them to a point where they really see the intent of the process. But so I think you can recover. I'm just not so sure how easily you can recover 3 or 4 or 5 days later, because oftentimes windows of opportunities do close. As you know, coaching, especially coaching, is oftentimes a felt need process anyway. So if someone gets beyond that felt need, then they can talk themselves out of coaching really easy anyway. So it's you know, recovery is a little bit harder. So I think that on a business level, I think recovery can be a little bit harder. But I think on a personal level, obviously humility and just the recognition that, wow, you came across as gangbusters. And you know, I can give example after example with individuals that I've come across in certain ways and had to go humble myself and have regrouped and recovered and have beautiful relationships with these people where I put just through certain responses and just certain ways that I things that I was going through and ways that I acted that I alienated them without intent. And that's how I realized, hey, wow, I am really, this is not my intent. I need to, you know, make this thing right and work with that. So, you know, I guess the question would be, you know, yeah, I think in most cases you can, but in some cases I think the opportunity may just be gone by. And, you know, of course my intent is more on a personal basis. I want to be perceived correctly on a business basis. If I lose the opportunity, then that's my problem, obviously, you know, that I have to deal with, hopefully, for the next opportunity.
Right. good insight. Going back to DiMaggio, can we go back to him a minute?
Sure can.
Okay. So one of the things another thing that struck me as you were talking was that he was very aware and very, very cognizant of his audience.
Mm-hmm.
When he got up to play, he was not so focused on himself or his personal achievements. I don't even know what his stats are. I know he was a fantastic ball player. But he was always aware of what he was there for, and that was to, I guess, on some level, entertain people, right? That's why people go to ball games, to be entertained. But I wonder, you know, he played for the Yankees, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And so I'm sure the Yankee fans loved him. But I'm wondering what or if he would have been able to please Sox fans, you know, White Sox or Red Sox fans, because you know where I'm going with this.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, that DiMaggio was respected for his quality of play. But let's just take the baseball analogy just a little bit further, Kim. Let's, you know, when we think of Babe Ruth, what do we think of?
I think of a candy bar.
Okay. You know, you're not a baseball fan, but for most people who think of Babe Ruth, they think of home run king. He used to be the world records home run king. But what they don't realize is that Babe Ruth struck out 3 or 4 times more than
ever.
Yes,
I have heard this before.
Yeah, you know, so statistic-wise, we look at statistics and we're like, boy, Babe Ruth, depending on how we look at the statistics and how we look at his life, we can say, wow, Babe Ruth was a strikeout king. He just never, he could never hit the ball. Or he was a home run king based off of what it is, you know. You look at statistics in baseball, and if a person is batting 250 or 300 out of 1,000, 250 or 300, they're making some big bucks, you know, in this world. You know, a lot of the designated hitters in baseball are 285 to 300. And what that really is telling you, that 1 out of every 4 or 1 out of every 3 times at bat, this guy is connecting with the ball. You know, so it's like, well, that means he's not hitting the ball or striking out or walking somehow, failing to get himself on base 2 out of 3 times at a 300 level and 3 out of 4 times at a 250 level. And you look at that and say, well, wow, that guy's not all that good. But you realize that, no, oftentimes the difference between good and great isn't 99.9 to 100%. Oftentimes the difference between good and great is just a matter of how many times you can hit the ball, you know. And it's not because you're hitting it more than you're missing it. Everybody, I don't know of any baseball player that has hit ever a life standing over 500. I don't know if anybody's even got close to 500 when it comes to the baseball standards. And that means, you know, that, you know, 500 means you miss half the time, that you're striking out half the time, you're getting put out half the time. So I mean, it's like, okay, it's, you know, we look at things differently, you know. But the idea of Joe DiMaggio saying, hey, I'm going to give 100%, I'm going to play hard, that didn't mean he played perfect. He just played to the greatest level of intensity, so that if anybody saw him, they would look at the process and say, wow, you know, he's consistent. You can say a lot of things. They may have hated him, but they couldn't have, you know, you really couldn't argue with his sports ethic and his ability to play the game and the intensity of which
he played. You couldn't dispute his talent.
That's it. You can't. And I think that that's oftentimes what we need to look at as people, is that there are going to be those people that perceive us wrongly, and there are going to be those people that don't like us. But the truth of the matter is the perception that we want to give, whether they like us or not, they've got to respect us for what we are capable of or what we do, those kind of things. They're, you know, I've had clients that have just said, you know, can you recommend a different coach? You're just not quite, I don't think we're quite accomplishing what I want to accomplish. And I have no problem with recommending another coach. If I can't meet the need of a client, then I definitely need to recommend them to a different coach. But they're not leaving me. I've never had a client leave me because I was a bad coach. I've had clients that I've recommended other coaches because they were women and they would relate to women better, or because they were looking for a special niche of which I didn't fill, and I could recommend a coach that would fill that niche, you know, that kind of thing. So I just think it's interesting to look at that process, especially when you realize that if we take it to the spiritual level of things, Kim, you realize that some of the people that may be watching this may be very well the people that God wants to use in our lives to help us reach that next level toward our vision. You know, that God may want to use in our lives to impact us in a special way.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, Greg, because, you know, I'm on Facebook and I Facebook quite a bit. And very frequently, I will have somebody pop up on my Facebook page to either, you know, like or make a comment on something that I've said that, you know, I haven't talked to these people or even thought about these people in months, sometimes years. And I'm always struck by the fact when that happens of the potential audience that I have and who's watching and how they are perceiving what I'm saying, and most of the time usually not commenting, but they're still taking it in. We don't know the impact of our words. We don't know the impact of our behavior. We don't know the impact of our mannerisms or how we carry ourselves or what we project to people. So I think it's a fascinating subject, and it goes back again to kind of paying attention to your surroundings.
How many times have you been judged as a mom, either as a good mom or as a negative mom, based off of the lives of your children? Though your children are older,
right,
they have free will. They have, you know, people judge us all the time based off of our children,
right,
or based off the friends we choose, or based off what are we doing. But I find it interesting. I was going to say, you know, Jesus in Matthew 5 says this: you're the light of the world. And then he says this statement at the end of that, in verse 16, he says, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. And I've had to really challenge myself to say, am I personifying everything I do, the good works? Am I willingly standing on top of this mountain, allowing other people to see my good works? So not as to gain glory for myself, but to gain glory for the Father in heaven.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
you know, one of the other,
I
go
think
ahead.
That, well, I think when our light shines, you know, it illuminates everything around us. The brighter the light, the greater the illumination. And that attracts people as well. Illumination, people are attracted to illumination.
They are.
And, yeah, and again, going back to why you need to be aware of your surroundings and who it is you're influencing, even unknowingly. And
well,
I don't know about you. I know you don't. You're not on Facebook a whole lot, but periodically I'll have someone contact me, even for coaching or for counseling or, you know, just for a conversation. That has been, they've been provoked because they've seen my dialogue with someone else. That's that light, you know.
Yeah. Well, even one step further. I think that one of the things that brings me the greatest amount of comfort, Kim, isn't the fact that other people are watching me. Sometimes that can be unnerving, you know, because I think, oh, man, I hope nobody saw that, or I hope nobody heard that come out of my mouth. That is, you know. Then I'm reminded, you know, in Psalms 32, I was doing my devotions this morning, I wonder about this stuff. And Psalms 32, verse 8 says, I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will counsel you with my eye upon you. You know, so we have God looking at us. 2 Chronicles 16:9 says, for the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth, that he may strongly support those whose hearts are completely his. And I thought, wow, not only do we have people watching us to make sure that we're, you know, and hopefully to see that we are glorifying God and that we're, you know, being professional and that we're, you know, illuminating things around us. We've got God watching over us, not only to instruct us, but to aid us, to see how he can assist us. I mean, he's constantly looking. And I thought to myself, man, this whole, you know, that's kind of a freaky feeling when you realize that there's a lot of eyes on you. You know, Hebrews talks about the great cloud of witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. And, you know, those witnesses have their eye on you. And I thought, wow, that's kind of an unnerving way. And so, I, you know, the whole purpose, obviously, of this show is to enlighten people, illuminate people on how they're living their mission or vision and how they're working towards certain things. And, you know, I just want to encourage the listeners that take stock in the fact that there are people that are watching you and not watching you to harm you or, you know, not trying to get into your privacy. But there are people that are watching you because they respect you, or there are people that are watching you because they're wondering whether or not they can help you or serve you, you know, in a certain way or the other. Or they're watching you because they want to know whether or not you can help and assist them in the process. So just kind of an interesting you know, interesting thing to chat about.
Absolutely. And what is it? What's the saying? I can't quote it verbatim, but it's something along the lines of character is who you are when no one is watching, or what you do when mm-hmm. no one is watching. And I know you pretty well, Greg, and I would say that you're pretty much the same guy whether anybody's watching or whether they're not.
Yeah, one of my core values is authenticity, and I think a lot of that stems from the fact that I want people to see me for who I am, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, I can always humble myself and ask for forgiveness if my authenticity is a little too raw, you know, that kind of thing. But one of the things that I hated while working in corporate America was the constant false front that I dealt with in other business people, and a constant false front that I had to put on myself when I was trying to negotiate business interests for the company, and knew wholeheartedly that I was called to leverage whatever I could to get the best of the company versus somebody else. And, you know, and so you find yourself being unauthentic because of the fact that you really care for the person you're negotiating with, but you can't afford to care in order to get what you need, you know, that kind of thing. It just got to be too much for me. I just couldn't handle the whole need to be something other than what I really felt like inside, and what I mm-hmm. felt God wanted me to personify. And so I think that whole aspect of being watched goes back to the desire to be authentic, to how I'm designed and how God has called me. And I know that that's important for you as well. You know, you truly want to be authentic to your clients, to your family, to your friends.
Absolutely, and I'm kind of like you. There are clients that that I can be more authentically me with than others. I have to temper mm-hmm. my fire, like you.
Right.
But I do think that at our core, and this is not just you and I; it's anybody. You know, if you just continue to yield to the core you, to the Christ in you, if mm-hmm. Christ in fact is you know, your Savior. I think that the authentic you, eventually we become more and more comfortable leaning into who he created us to be. Mm-hmm. And when we are kind of walking out our individuality vis-a-vis in Christ, you know, we shouldn't really recoil from anybody watching us. We should be comfortable with it because we're being who he created us to be.
Yeah. So we've got about 30 or 40 seconds left. I'm going to give some closing thoughts, Kim, and I'm going to pass it over to you. But I would like our listeners to understand that, you know, I guess a closing thought for me would that God doesn't create something and then throw it away. God creates something and then redeems it and relocates it and trains it to be the authentic, beautiful aspect of what he's designed it to be. And in that process, people watch, and people are clearly intrigued. So be the best Jesus you can be. Be authentic to how God has designed you, and you'll be amazed at the number of people that will gravitate toward you. Not because you're perfect, but because you're authentic.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kim, give us some closing thoughts, and then why don't you sign the
call? You know, I can't add to that, Greg. Absolutely. Be who he's created you to be, and rest in who he's created you to be, and let him morph and tweak you as you grow. But don't mm-hmm. beat yourself up because you're not where you you think others feel you should be, or where even you feel you should be. You know, it's just a process. Life is a process, and I don't know anybody yet that's arrived. So with that, we want to thank our listeners for tuning in again this week. There's some changes coming to our program in the weeks ahead, and we're excited about sharing those changes with you, and we'll do so in the next couple of calls. But in the interim, you guys have a blessed week. Greg, my friend, have a great week, and we'll connect again in 2 weeks.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.